And God willing, in your ordinations, that you will be a servant of the church of Jesus Christ. And as in so many times in history, you know, we always think we read about these things in history books, never in our own time, you know, of the potential of such great and possible confusion. The one thing that I have, it is really, truly, I think, been a blessing, is that the mainstream media just seems to be absolutely either clueless or uninterested in our internal fights. Because I really think that if somehow it would hit the mainstream media, if you're talking about confusion now, you're going to really, bring it forward. So for right now, it seems to be more of an internal kind of thing, and you know, people in the know and following these things, you know, are there. I think also, generally, except for those of you who are church types, the ordinary person in the pew has no idea. You know, they're probably thinking about somebody floating down the Amazon River. You know? Well, I think they have an idea what the Amazon Synod is all about. Or what, you know, what's happening there. So, anyway, I'm just going to open it up to your own concerns, questions, and not that I can answer. Maybe Father Brzezinski, maybe some of us know some of the things of what has been said. But you know, your concerns, questions, and whatever. What might want to bring up regarding kind of the situation right now that we find ourselves in.
So I've had no physical myself looking into this. I'm only hearing from secondhand from my son what's going on. But am I hearing, or maybe you could tell us what is being said that's controversial or possibly going to cause a schism in the church? I guess I'm confused about what is actually happening.
Give us the background.
Well, let's deal with the big one. How about the divinity of Christ?
Pardon me?
What? I know you're going to say that.
Say what?
Yeah. I mean,
Father Brzezinski, you're going to have to help me out of this because, you know. But I mean, from what you hear, what I hear. But it's from the preparations of the things that and it's not just the Amazon Synod. Some of this is being pieced together with some of the things that the Holy Father has talked about, or you know, in other places such as was the conference thing with Syria, or with the Middle East, I think, at the time, where there is a question that is simply being posed by others: is he really not denying but not affirming the full divinity of Christ? Okay. Ooh. Yeah. So that's the big question.
So I'm assuming we're gonna find out what our Pope's position is on that. You know. No, that's a good point. We haven't found his position on anything else so far.
Well, let me just put it this way. He's not very precise in his theological, you know.
He does not clarify.
He doesn't clarify. That's where there's been some reports about the fact that there have been some other people around him that have been spun this, you know, this kind of thing about what he has said and all of that. So anyway, that has kind of come out. He's talking about women's ordination beginning with the diaconate.
That is true. That's what I heard from his son, and I was just wondering if that's true or not.
Right. And the fact that statements to the extent that you don't, and I think this has to partly do with deal with the divinity of Christ, kind of an offshoot of it, that you don't have to find salvation in Jesus Christ, that you can find it in whatever path that you might, you know, that you might choose. So there really is no kind of evangelistic demand of being able to present the gospel and to bring people to Christ, because they, you know, salvation can be found in other ways. So if you kind of get an idea, this is not whether girls can serve at the altar. this is hitting to some of the doctrinal things. I don't know. Did you find that?
Oh, well, I mean, I was trying to pull up the instrument in the voice or those kinds of things.
Yeah.
The divinity of Christ piece, I think, was a conversation with the Scalfari, or whatever his name is, the atheist. He's gotten the Holy Father in trouble before. The Holy Father's gotten himself in trouble before, just by the way that he talks with this fella. And the problem with this fella, Scalfari, is that he doesn't take any notes during his interviews, and he just reports what he heard. And then, of course, when he reports things like, that the Holy Father told him that he should think of Jesus as God, that he should think of him as something else, that's not very trustworthy. The Vatican did release a press release, that's not what the Holy Father said, so they're at least doing their damage control. And I forget exactly what other, and it was one of the more problematic things that Scalfari had quoted, that was not very, becoming the Holy Father in a sense, and so he presumed the erroneous interpretation of Scalfari. He could not maybe talk to him, insist on somebody take notes, and those kinds of things, but obviously that goes back to just a lack of care. Or precision. The instrumentum laboris, what can I say? Cardinal Burke certainly had his concerns, and that's what I'm looking at now. And it has to do with just that. The principal errors, talk about six principal errors in the instrumentum laboris. And instrumentum laboris, mind you, is just theologians that have written this for the helping of the synod. And my knowledge, friends that talked to from the summer that were home from Rome, well, they live in the universities where these fellows that wrote this document live. And, most of us would have a hard time agreeing with everything that they say, and probably would not assign them such duties or trust them with our cats. But nevertheless, that's who's working on this. And again, most of that is kind of hearsay, but I trust the source. But the things like the implicit pantheism, the identification of God with the universe and nature, where God and the world are one. These are in the instrumentum laboris. So the document that people use, the bishops use as they're talking about things, is what.
And if I can just kind of extend to that, because a lot of one of the significant things that they're talking about, as you see, as an agenda item, is the ecology and the earth. And so part of this theological thing is extended into this pantheism in terms of being able to care for the earth as caring for God himself.
Really close that you can come to pantheism without actually being pantheistic, we're told to love your neighbor. Pantheist says God is your neighbor. The sources of divine revelation Father mentioned, the phrase that's quoted is alternative pathways for salvation. That's just false. There is only one, who is Jesus Christ. And we have ways, and good ways of explaining those folks, like in the Amazon, on how they would be saved, without having explicit faith, during their life in Christ. That's not the angle that the instrumentum laboris, the stocking that, is like the starting point for the Synod Fathers. So bishops didn't write this, and then the theologians did, the ones that I was teasing the comment ago. And then the cats, yeah. No, I don't like cats. Thirdly, erroneous, the Aboriginal people have received a divine revelation, so a similar kind of thing. Again, it's a quotation that the people, the original Aboriginal people have already received divine revelation, that the Catholic Church in the Amazon should undergo a missionary and a pastoral conversion. You know, it's the divine revelation piece. And usually when people talk this way, they're a little sloppy with their language. We can talk about God revealing himself in through creation, but that's not the same as the supernatural divine revelation that comes through Jesus Christ. And so, you know, it's just, you be careful with your terms, and it's not really clear what they mean by that. You know, and I think the better ones, like Cardinal Seurat, has had some very nice comments, you know, about really trying to use the sin for what it's for, and that's how best to evangelize the people of the Amazon. Because it is an incredibly difficult pastoral place, you know, and so anyhow, there's that. Tailoring Catholic ordained ministries to the ancestral customs of the Aboriginal people. Granting official ministries to women and ordained married leaders of the community as second-class priests, deprived of part of their ministerial powers, but able to perform shamanic rituals. So, that's weird again, right? I mean, so, in my own mind, a way to take a deep breath about the extension, and I'm using my words deliberately, the extension of married clergy, right? Because all of you are very familiar with some married clergy in the Catholic Church of the West. You know, and then we do have married priests, by exception, even in the West. So it's not something that's totally foreign. So be careful of, you know, overstating what this is all about. So it's not, you know, it's definitely a worth of pastoral consideration whether or not these viri parati, these approved men, potentially like more mature, would be ordained, not just to the diaconate, but to the priesthood, in order to get sacraments to these remote areas. That's a legitimate question. What becomes like difficult and why it's so frustrating is when they throw in this other stuff. Like, you're going to ordain like the fellow who is the Aboriginal priest of the tribe, and then allow him to continue his shamanic, whatever I would say that, rules, rituals. A witch doctor.
Yeah.
And so how much of that is just like, you know, kind of natural, or how much of it is tied to a paganism that we can't appropriate? You know, we cannot. And then, I have no idea. You know, and hopefully that's what they talk about, but it just seems like the conditions in the church are such that even asking those questions, is preempted by, well, you know, don't trouble us with over-refined theology. It's like, well, actually, that's a really good question. You know, and so anyhow, that's potentially problematic. And then the fifth one has to do with the implicit pantheistic views in the approach to the ecology of these. Again, like, you know, just be careful. We can embrace a whole bunch of stuff. The integral ecology point begins in Benedict. It gets carried through Francis. And it's a great way, I think, in a part to evangelize our culture today. And I've mentioned it to most of you at different points. Like, what ecology says is that, you know, the earth has a nature that has a kind of order and integrity, that has certain laws that flow from it that should be respected if that nature is to flourish. Right? We could say that about our planet, and it's really helpful that if we can get people to agree that to the planet, we can extend it, then it also applies to human nature. And I love the movie WALL-E. It's a cartoon about a robot who is a garbage robot. He goes and he cleans up the garbage on planet Earth because it's gotten uninhabitable. To live on, and then so all the humans have lived now, moved up on a spaceship, and they live on a spaceship, and they live in barcalungers, and they just get whatever they want. You know, if they want a sort of big gulp soda, it just like it gets tunneled to them and pops in their chair, and they get a big gulp soda. If they want to wear blue, their clothes are changed, and they're wearing blue, and they're all like supremely obese and overweight, and And so anyhow, and then what they do is they discover, they send out these other robots. Her name is Eve, and she discovers life, a flower that's now growing on what had been previously the uninhabitable Earth. And so this nature of Earth has now kind of repaired itself to a degree, and is now, you know, producing more oxygen, and is now more helpful to live. Like, the body can do this kind of stuff, you know, the repairing capacity of the body really is amazing. Why? Because it has this internal principle that we call a nature that, yes, has an order that flows from it and laws that come from it that need to be respected in order for the body to flourish. So likewise with the planet, it has a nature. Well, anyhow, I just think that's so helpful, right, to say all about what we want about all kinds of things that have natures, including human beings or marriage and family or the church or whatever. But the problem is when they consider that ecology as an extension of divine. And I was just telling all you aspirants just now that one of the beautiful things about our faith is the Christian distinction, and that is this distinction between God and the world. And the idea is that God plus the world is not better than God alone, right? And so anyhow, the world definitely is not identical with God. And this is an application where that people, if they knew that principle, or if they, you know, if they took my class, they would be fine. Anyway, and then the last one is the, let's see here. Ecological conversion, which includes adoption of the social model of Aboriginal tribes where individual personality and freedom are undermined. So, are the 6 points.
And that's what's happening. That this is the kind of thing that's being discussed. And when this comes forward, then obviously there are great theologians that are looking at these things very, very carefully to see how, if somebody's going to buy this, how it's going to affect, it's like a house of cards, you know. Pretty soon you tip one thing and then all of a sudden the rest goes. It's not, if there's an integral unity to our theology and that it makes sense, when you start to fuss around over here, it begins to affect itself later on. that's part of it. Now, that's in combination of the Germans. So that's what out of South America, you know, where there is a real problem with the German church Karl Marx and
Casper
and a number of them which are purporting agendas, kind of really basically, it's kind of happening, dismantling the John Paul II marriage and family life, kind of that in his teaching. With the permission possibly of, looking toward the recognition, the valid recognition of homosexuality as a legitimate lifestyle and marriage and all those kind of things. So that's in Germany. So let me just put it this way. If you think politics is confusing right now, go out and see that, to see that within the church. Now, you can take a high dive into all that, okay? And there are people who have. What I'm going to share with you is some of a perspective, and it was a Capuchin, actually, and I can't remember his name, Thomas, is a teacher. And his perspective on this, and I think that he has something really, really good to say, is he says that that in all of this, we may be learning that maybe even the more ordinary Catholic through these years, I say it, especially in the United States, through things like EWTN and Catholic social media and all these other, Scott Hahn, and that they're a little bit sharper than everybody thought. Because he said that the opposition toward all of this, if you're going to centralize it, is really coming from the United States. The theologians, bishops, even laity as a strong part of this. So he doesn't expect that there's going to be this mass schism where there'd be the Pope and his army on one side and, you know, everybody else on the other. Because, and his commentary was simply, he's not looking. I'm going to give you the image that he gave. The image that he gave, and I chuckled, but I thought it was kind of true, is, you know, you have a kind of a father that's running, trying to run, keep a family together, who doesn't know how to necessarily father, you know what I mean? That he's trying to please all of his children and his wife and all of this kind of thing. And so he's hinging here and there or whatever because, you know, he's doing good by that. In other words, discipline is not is forte, okay? So what you end up having is the Holy Father having to deal in many respects with a mess, with people who have somehow gotten their way on certain issues, theological principles, or even certain disciplines. And you know how that goes in a home. When there are certain kids who should have been disciplined, get away with something, the other kids, they don't take that so well, okay? But you just don't have, you know, it's messy. But there may be certain sectors, certain, you know, segments. He says, you know, there might be a split in the church in Germany. I wanted to say, what's new? You know, I mean, go back to the Reformation. We're just facing it at this time. But in terms of this whole mass of the whole church, that as you look at the perspective of like Africa and, you know, in many other places around the world, and even in the West, that there are just any number of people who are coming to a defense of that. So
maybe if I can add to that, I don't want to interrupt you though.
Oh, go ahead.
Many of you have shared that conversation with Benedict XVI after my dissertation. You know, so the situation was, you know, that after the defense and was praying the rosary with him, and the lineup was my professor, me, and then there was his Pope Emeritus, Pope Benedict, and then there was Archbishop Gainsbourg. And we, you know, met in the Vatican Gardens and everything, and I'll skip to the end, but that's the relevant part. Because in the conversation that followed, Benedict said, you know, the church in the United States, it's alive. And we said, and then Archbishop Gainsbourg, his secretary, said, well, why is that? And then the Father Carolla, who I was with, he said, oh, well, honestly, it will often boil down to the local bishop. And the local bishop, if he is not opposed to the faith, sounds like a pretty low standard. you know, and I think we found that we've been very lucky in our diocese. I mean, speaking of La Crosse, but I think we would speak for all the Wisconsin dioceses of being very lucky. And you know, getting good bishops at times when maybe, like, by good bishops, I mean bishops that, like, you know, well, actually, I guess what I mean is bishops that think like me. I mean, that's a good challenge for me, too. But anyhow.
And furthermore, like Jesus Christ.
Right, well, yeah. With the mind and heart of the church, which is what we're all about. And we'd be very happy to, you know, change, right? And Ignatius of Loyola said if the church said that something was black that he believed to be white, he would change his opinion and call it black. And it's one of his rules for picking the church. Now, obviously, we wouldn't be called to do something like that to that extent or that outrageously. But it's a really beautiful principle and can really only be appreciated, I think, by those who really want to think and act with the church. Anyway, so So then the conversation goes on. The faith flourishes. And then he said, and then Benedict goes, you know what? Actually, it's true. If the bishop will encourage the faith, if he will allow it to grow, if he will, you know, sort of support it where it needs to be supported, if he's a father, ultimately, it gives, you know, life grows. And maybe that's, you know, a problem more often than not, like, you know, of just really having father issues, like just not having the spiritual fathers, especially in the sort of places of responsibility that would really allow the faith to really flourish. It is something I think that other parts of the world, for sure, and maybe even some parts of our own country would struggle with. And then he goes on, he says, catechesis. Catechesis in the United States is alive, is strong. And we're like, well, yeah, especially in our part of the world, in the Midwest. And I know that we know that, you know, not every diocese, not every parish, but as the world goes, we're okay in terms of, we're growing. And, you know, like, take a look around in this room, and know that you are the signs of hope of which Benedict was talking. Okay? And then that was the day after Newman's, and this is why it's really, really appropriate. It was the day after Newman's day of his ordination, or his birthday, by the Pope. And we had celebrated, just Father and I, with a group called Friends of Newman, in the place where Newman had his first mass. And then at the end of this meeting, Benedict, you know, so it gets a little bit more personal, I suppose. But it just points to just St. John Henry Newman is a great, like, shining light for us, especially in, you know, difficult times. You know that poem, "Weak Kindly Light, Rebounding Arm"? I do not ask to see the distant shores. Just one step is enough for me. But anyhow, at the end of the meeting, the Holy Father pulled out, kind of gifts, and Pope's always give gifts, they have a re-gift gifts. And this was no different. It was a coin, but it was a coin that commemorated his apostolic visit to England, in which he beatified Newman. And it was just really cool when he, you know, gave that coin, and tomorrow Newman will be a saint. So, you know, obviously that God's will is being accomplished, and God is powerful enough to make things happen, you know, so. Anyhow, I share that as a piece of encouragement in spite of, like, maybe some, you know, other things that are less than encouraging.
Any other comments, questions from you? Because I think that one of the things you have to be careful of. This is an old Ignatian principle of getting sucked into this too. You know? In other words, kind of almost abandoning the fact that Jesus Christ is in charge of his church. And he promised that the jaws of hell would not prevail against it. So we have to kind of stand back a little bit to be able to see that. And I think part of it is a little bit of a shocker, as we've expressed before, in coming from the confusion of the initial interpretation by many of the Second Vatican Council, that we had a John Paul II and Benedict XVI who really spent years and years and years and years of kind of, I want to say, putting things back in order and with a very solid kind of catechesis and bringing order back to what seemed to be so chaotic. And then all of a sudden to find yourself like, okay, we just got this thing. the room is a little clean now, and there's signs of growth, and then kapow, somebody drops a bomb and it seems like, okay. But it hasn't. And so you have to believe that, you know, all of the work that St. John Paul II did and Pope Benedict XVI did throughout all of those years, really the fruits of it now are paying off. in that respect, I think, because there is a much more intelligent clergy, I think, intelligent bishops, and also intelligent ladies that has come through those years to be able to, you know, to see them.
I was listening to Relevant Radio yesterday, or maybe 2 days ago, and I don't know, something startling I heard. Students in schools are choosing their own gender, whether they get to kindergarten or first grade or something now. And then they went on to say there's 51 gender choices. Mm-hmm. What is that?
51 gender.
Genders.
That's not news. That's been going on for several years.
Male, female.
Yeah. Now, and this is also a part of it too, is that on the one hand we've got this confusion that's happening in who we see as our parents. You know, and then from, you know, even political perspectives, especially us, you know, within the United States, you know, you have this vast political, moral, social divide that is taking place, you know, in that realm. You know, so you go to yourself and you want to say, you know, what is going on? You know, what is going on in the world? And right now we are in times that will be written about in history. You know, what will happen. It's not a time of great clarity and confusion in terms of resolving things. But I like what Father Kazuski said to the third year guys before I left. When you find yourself in the darkness, when Ignatius says, or it was a, no, it wasn't Ignatius, the book you're reading, I think.
It was Jacques Philippe.
Yeah, Jacques Philippe. Mm-hmm. Is, was it the question? Sometimes
you move the question from a why to a how?
Yeah, from a why. And that's kind of what we're doing. We're trying to figure this out. And it's just not going to, I mean, a lot of this stuff is just, this is not going to make sense. And we ought to try to make sense of it. But we stand back and we rest in the truth that we have and to be able to live it and to hear that call. How is it that we can be part of the
I can bring the text down. Oh, no, I can. It's in my car.
Yeah.
But
it's called agender.
Agender?
Yeah. Agender is someone who does not identify with any sort of gender.
It's like St. Paul who said, you know that God that's up in there, up there that you don't have a name for? Mm. Let me tell you about him.
You accept the kind of the darkness of just not knowing necessarily what, you know, all this means or why or whatnot, but the answer of how I should live, what principles of the gospel I should live now, what peace can I contribute in this particular set of circumstances, those are questions that always have answers. And that's really all we need. We've just got a beautiful. No, I think, you know, be joyful and be grateful and be, you know, like, love our Catholic faith and pray for the Holy Father and, you know, we'll wait. Really, it's one of those deals where you've got to wait really for the post-synodal apostolic exhortation, which could be months from now. And then we'll figure out, you know, sort of like, you know, what the Holy Father's mind is and, you know, and we'll do what we would do for anything. That is interpreted under the light of the, you know, kind of enduring tradition and teachings of the Church, and that doesn't change, you know, that doesn't change for anything. You know, whoever is writing and whatever they're saying is going to be interpreted in continuity with the tradition that came before it, and it doesn't mean that different things couldn't be tweaked or advanced or whatever. No, I'm not saying that either. But everything will be interpreted in continuity, can be interpreted as in continuity, you know, this beautiful Catholic faith that we've found and fallen in love with. So, mm-hmm.
I think that's an important thing too, of you being in formation, because you're able to kind of wallow in that. I mean, in terms of your studies and all of this, of the, you know, the beauty and the truth of the of our faith. where you're being, you know, fed intellectually, spiritually, humanly, pastorally, you know, with the richness, you know, of that faith, in a time when a lot of people are just kind of sitting in poverty and ignorance. So first thing you might want to say is, you know, I guess I hopped the right ship. You know what I mean? It's kind of nice that here is where I am in a time when there is, you know, such confusion. But eventually, again, that, you know, with the call, then you're sent out to be able to bring that kind of strength and consolation to others. That's what, that's kind of what I wanted to say, as I think what Father Kazuski said is true. I know Bishop Callahan has said that, that he has not seen a kind of unity among the bishops. I think I told you that before. Unity among the bishops of the state of Wisconsin. You know, just in kind of a general one mind and one heart kind of thing. You know, since he's been a bishop. And so that's really strengthening and concerning to him. So I think just that for all of us, that's also a great help, you know, is that we're not going to be hit into episcopal wars, you know, between what somebody's doing in one diocese and the other, and, you know, all that, you know, all that kind of thing. That God has graced us in that respect with some very faithful men who God has called to be bishops and good shepherds, and so that we need to, you know, assist them, you know, with all of our heart. You were good.
I was just going to say, on top of all that, I think it's really important that we all remember that we're called to pray for those people, for God's guidance, and for all of us. Jeff, help me out. Who is the saint that gave the death blows to all the heresies? How did he win those battles?
Love and charity.
With love and charity, yes. We should always treat everybody with love and charity, no matter how they come at us or what they come to us with.
You know, and I think some of the cardinals, including Cardinal Burton, as we know personally, you know, have said this so often, because it kind of gets embedded into his personal things, you know, that we hate the Pope. And he says, no, we love the Pope. We are going to be faithful to the Pope in terms of our fidelity to the papacy, to his office, and we're doing everything possibly that we can to help the Pope. Okay? You know, that's for that fraternal correction and charity. That's what he's talking about, but it has to be fraternal. It has to be charitable. It has to be honest and loving, you know. And so as they're doing, you know, they're doing, so we have to do to others who, you know, who may, you know, think differently. The other thing that I never thought about is that from this kind of cultural, social confusion that we live in, I guess it's just something that I pondered, is that, you know, let's just say, for example, that something about this kind of pantheistic notion of God advances, ordination of women, or same-sex marriage and all this kind of thing, somehow advances in, so I'm not saying it becomes the teaching of the church, but what I'm saying is that this, you know, this would advance. For the most part, this commentator said, the most of the world, especially in the West, is going to be unimpressed. It's like, what do you mean? We've been there for years. You know what I mean? It was like, what's a new kind of revelation? You know, they're not going to find this to be astounding, new, insightful ideas. They're not even going to be, you know, that's not going to be a thing. And if you think that those people who might hop on board with that, or I mean, really support that, are really at all concerned that now the authority of the church is, you know, speaking authoritatively about this, oftentimes they don't even care about authority. So, yeah. This guy in Rome says this.
So what?
He'll be the Pope. So putting it kind of in the cultural framework, that we as faithful Catholics might be making more of this in terms of its impact than we think. Because we're thinking from that point of view, as opposed to somebody who is out there who doesn't trust much authority at all, who the moral and social confusion that is there is present. This is nothing new. Okay, this is nothing new. So it may be a kind of an agenda on some of these items. But maybe that's why it's not making any impact. You ever think about that? I never thought about that. So we have to be careful that we don't make something bigger than it maybe as well.
One thing that we can do, something that we personally can do, is to combat the confusion, is to become holy ourselves, to follow the Church closely, to follow what we've learned closely, and to be formed for Christ and be that living example of Christ right from our point.
Exactly.
That's the best we can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. What's the problem with the Church right now? I am. It'd be better.
And Deacon Gavin, I was talking to him a little earlier, and he said that over in the Twin Cities, where he works with formation of deacons and priests over there, as part of his job, he's a deacon from our diocese, but an assistant works over there. And he said that there's a number of priests who started to celebrate loaded masses to St. Joseph, and prayers to St. Joseph, who is the patron of the Universal Church, for his protection over the whole of the Universal Church. So I just might, suggest that to you, that you might include prayers to St. Joseph. Moderator of Minister St. Joseph, and we, long ago, we chose a particular prayer that always kind of touched us, that I think is so important today, is Blessed Joseph, husband of Mary, be with us this day. Who protected and cherished the Virgin, loving the child Jesus as your son. Defend the Church, the household of God, purchased by the blood of Christ, guardian of the Redeemer, Holy Redeemer. Assist us in our trials. And now I'm trying to say this prayer, I can't. But anyway, defend the Church, the household of God, purchased by the blood of Christ. It's a beautiful, beautiful prayer that's kind of taken greater significance. So, anyway, anything else?
As we feel all beat up by this, and then the scandal last year, some hope. I was talking with one of the fathers of one of the focus missionaries. That is also a focus missionary, not at the same location as my son, but she has been assigned to Texas A&M. They've got 400 students a day attending daily mass.
Right. Wow. A huge thing right there.
Yes, that is hope. Right there, they're the future of our church. And
we have some pretty good focus missionaries in our own backyard.
Yes.
Right. All right. Good. Been a long day, long couple of days, so we've got to get a long trip home. And thank God we don't have slippery roads. We've warmed up enough that everything's fine. So we give you a blessing and send you on the way.
Real quick, if anyone has more questions or more thoughts, or is unsettled by even what's said today, then please reach out and we'll talk. Don't pretend to presume that everything is said the way it should.
And this is part of the object, at the end of this day, when everybody's together, we kind of talk about that, the director's conference. It's not another session of teaching, but of being able to look at things like this so that we can discuss them. And use the knowledge that we've learned from all this kind of thing. But to deal with things that are very relevant today how we need to live, but then also how eventually to minister as deacons of the church. So if there are other concerns or whatever, this also will be a time to bring them forward and to know that. Okay? The Lord be with you.
And with your spirit.
May Almighty God bless you, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Amen.
Go in peace.
Thanks be to God.